This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is deflation the new enemy?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The Federal Reserve may be turning its attention to a new threat, deflation. A new report from one of the regional Federal Reserve presidents says not to fear imminent inflation and increasing prices. Instead, the Fed needs to keep an eye on decreasing prices. Marketplace's Janet Babin is here live. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Bill.
The Federal Reserve is usually battling inflation. Why the shift?
Yeah, so James Bullard is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. He's got a new report out that warns about deflation. And Bullard's usually on the other side of the debate, worried about inflation. So this could be a real turning point. Now, Bullard says that the financial crisis, of course, has forced the Fed to keep interest rates at record lows. And this could be, he says, a double-edged sword that could actually aggravate deflation.
But as a consumer anyway, don't I kind of want prices to fall?
Well, it's values that end up falling, like the housing market. Mark Vitner, senior economist at Wells Fargo, he explains the big problem with deflation is that when prices fall, companies need to reduce wages, but that's hard to do in the U.S.
What you wind up with is very high unemployment, and that's probably the greatest risk from deflation right now is that it would create a much deeper recession, and it would be much harder for the United States to get back out of it.
So the Fed says this isn't right around the corner, but deflation now definitely on the Fed's radar screen.
Okay. Marketplace's Janet Babin, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Budweiser has lost a battle to have its name trademarked in Europe. The American brand has fought for years against a Czech beer maker called Budweiser Budvar. That Czech company can now call itself Bud in some major European countries. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
Both beers have the same name, but one's a light lager, originally from St. Louis, and now owned by the global giant AB InBev, and the other is a darker beer, steeped in small-town Eastern European tradition. Larry Nelson is the editor of Brewer's Guardian.
Budvar is a small Czech brewery with a production of roughly 1/1,000th of what AB InBev would produce worldwide.
Now, the highest court in Europe has decided the American Budweiser brand can't use its name in Germany or Austria. It's not known yet how the company will market itself there. But the root of the problem comes from the fact that Budweiser simply means beer from the town of Budweiss. And with Czech beer growing in popularity, the global brand didn't want any misunderstanding. Nelson says the decision won't impact Budweiser too much. Most other European countries, including the UK, allow both companies to use the name. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Für werden zahlen machen, or let's do the numbers. Germany's DAX is down 0.5%, right in line with other European markets. Asian shares fell today, more than 1% in Japan. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials lost 30 points, 0.3%, to close at 10,467.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
Lift up the hood on your car these days, and it's hard to find the spark plugs. Even mechanics might be lost under there, unless they have the specs from the automaker. And unless those mechanics work for dealerships, they might not be able to get those specs. Well, today, the Massachusetts legislature could vote on a bill to force car makers to share repair information with independent mechanics. From WBUR in Boston, Kurt Nickisch has our story.
Jeff McLeod is vacationing with his family on a remote New England lake. The 2004 Kia Sedona they drove to get there is working now, but before the trip, its check engine light lit up. McLeod's trusty mechanic, Tom's service station, plugged into the car's computer for the error code. But Tom wasn't allowed to look up what it meant. McLeod had to take the minivan to the dealer for that.
It made me uncomfortable that somebody that had done that amount of work for me over the years was not able to do this.
Cars have gotten so complicated, repair shops are clueless unless they have the flowchart to troubleshoot these error codes and software glitches.
It's a puzzle. All we want is the directions to put the puzzle back together.
Barry Steinberg runs a Boston area repair shop. He says he needs the Right to Repair Act to force automakers to give out diagnostic information, or he'll go out of business. He points to an older Pontiac that one of his workers is fixing.
There's just so many of those Grand Prix left. I mean, when they wear out, they're going to be replaced by 2005, 2006, 2010, 2015 cars. There's going to be fewer cars that we can fix.
It's like knocking on Coca-Cola's door and saying, hey, I am a little cola place down the street. My cola isn't selling that well. What's the formula to Coca-Cola? Give it to me.
Ernie Bach Jr. runs the top-performing Honda dealership in the world. Dealers, he says, have to invest in costly equipment and sophisticated training.
We don't call them mechanics. They're technicians. They're like surgeons. I mean, this is extremely complicated stuff. This is not about willy-nilly giving out information and having any Tom, Dick, and Harry work on it.
Dealerships make more of their money nowadays from follow-up service than from car sales. So Bach Jr. says if the bill becomes law, expect both sides to rev up for a court fight. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
And finally, here is the week's business news shrunk to a Marketplace minute. We got financial information from some major corporations. Colgate did so-so in terms of selling Dynamo and Speedstick and Toms of Maine. They only saw a modest gain in Handy Wipes and Ambisol and Ultra Bright and Fab and all the soaps and toothpastes that they sell. Profits soared at Sony, Shell, Motorola, Mitsubishi. Boeing sales were kind of squishy. Kellogg said the other day sales were blah for Special K and Apple Jacks and Honey Smacks and Mini Wheats and other treats like Pop-Tarts and Cruncheroos and Cinnamon Marshmallow Scooby-Doos. Lockheed did succeed. Exxon, Avon, yes, indeed, they did. And so did Conoco. Hyundai, yes. Nintendo, no. The final name I have in mind lost more than all those firms combined. It can't be a thrill to lose 17 bill, but then don't do the spill. That is, don't do the drill if you can't clean the spill. Stay tuned for news of GDP, and I'll see you at marketplace.org. Doing this live in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.